It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, it appears that the microphones are doing something, so that's good. Let's get the serious stuff out of the way. Last week, you all were expecting a part two episode, and you did not get one. You got an evil one instead. And many of you are wondering, pourquoi?
Yeah, those evil guys wouldn't even talk about mom jokes properly, I guess.
Nope.
That's what you get for being evil.
Garbage. What happened is, we recorded the part one. 2 weeks ago, we were recording part one and part two. We recorded the part one, and while it was processing, and we were waiting to record part two, my wife come in and just brought everybody down. It's not untrue. During the thing, my brother tried to get a hold of me, but of course, I wasn't looking at my phone while we were recording, so I called my wife. So she comes in. My 85-year-old father had fallen down a flight of stairs into a potted plant. And that was bad.
Yeah, that is bad.
And my parents live at the beach, so nobody's close by. They called the 911 and the ambulances showed up. And then they went to the hospital. And then my mom finally thought to call my sister, and my sister headed right there, which meant 2 hours later, my sister showed up. So we didn't know what was going on. At that point, I think my father was not really conscious. And so I was like, I don't feel like doing a podcast.
Right.
Maybe let's not.
Yeah.
And so we didn't.
Right.
And the evil guys helped out. But now William wants to quit on us again next week. So tonight we're going to do two-part. And it better happen, because I'm going to be really annoyed if, like, we finish and then Trish comes in and is like, yeah, somebody else fell downstairs. So just so everybody knows what happened, he really, for an 85-year-old man falling backwards down a flight of stairs into a potted plant, he came out as best as you could possibly imagine. He did break something. He broke one of his vertebrae. It was in the middle. It wasn't one of the scary neck ones or the scary lower back ones. T5, for those who know what that means. And it was on the side of one of the vertebrae, and it was a stable fracture. So he actually went home that night without a brace and slept in his own bed. A little bit scarier was he had a major concussion.
Oh.
And, like, he was very confused a lot the first day or two.
Yeah, right, you told me that.
And it was compounded by the fact that he was taking narcotic pain medication.
Sure.
The good news is he stopped having to take, like, pretty quick. His pain wasn't bad enough to take that, and that helped. And it just improved every day and every day. And he's doing pretty well now.
Good.
I talked to him on the phone. He's written some emails. He's not doing too much of that stuff because, again, not good for concussion. But he's getting better. And the potential good thing that comes out of this is it finally has my parents saying, we really need to get serious about moving out of this three-story house we live in.
Sure.
Yeah. So once this is all settled, I think the family's going to talk about making that happen sooner rather than later. And me and my brother and Trish have already been like, you know, let us know. We can take a week off and come and help pack or help move or whatever. So that'll be happening. So that's things are pretty good there. But this was a rough patch, and yeah, they're just in the point, something like, they've even had talk about assisted living, because it's basically, they can take care of themselves, but if something happens to either one of them, it's hard for the other one to take care of the other
one. Right.
And that, my mom is doing that right now, but it's it's hard on her. And also, my sister's coming out every few days to help and all that, because my sister's not doesn't have a full-time job herself. She stays at home, so she's coming out to do that a whole bunch, and that's huge. And I've got them both cleared. I'm like, you know, you let me know if you need help. I tell mom, I'm like, if you need help, talk to Sarah. And I tell Sarah, I'm like, if she needs too much help or whatever, you call me, I'll come out. My work knows that I might have to do that, but it looks like things are going good. So that's good.
So, I mean, how have you been coping with the whole thing? It can be really stressful when you're far away.
It was. The weird part for me, that night was a rough night, and yeah. I did not get a lot of sleep.
Sure.
But luckily, I did eventually fall asleep, and also my brother had heard sooner, and he texted how things were going. And then the next day, I talked to my mom, and then I talked to my brother some, and I talked to my sister a couple days later, and then I actually talked to my dad. What I have determined from this is, unfortunately, I appear to have a psychological block, and I will probably refuse to believe that either of my parents are capable of dying until one of them dies. I have moments when I was going to sleep that night, and we hadn't confirmed yet. I had trouble sleeping, and one of the things is my mind was just coming up with eulogies I would give at my father's funeral. And that was weird.
Yeah.
But... sort of once it's been set. I mean, I've been checking on him. I was going to call last week, and I didn't for other reasons I'll get into later. But I've been pretty okay once it sort of stabilized and
sure,
stuff. And then
right.
I just want to make sure nobody's taking on too much and everybody's asking for help. I had a talk with my dad that day because my dad is a stubborn guy. And he is one of those old people, like almost all old people, that... as things get harder and you can do less and you have problems, you fight against that because it, you know, for totally understandable reasons, but it makes it really hard for the 76-year-old woman who's trying to take care of him. So when I talk to him, I say, I know mom could be a pain in the ass sometimes, but you are an 85-year-old man who broke his spine falling downstairs. And it's possible to make it much worse if you don't do things right. So try and do what she says and be careful. And he heard me. And I knew he would because I started the phone call with several jokes, which made him laugh. And also, I specifically said my mom could be a pain in the ass, knowing we were on speakerphone and she was in the room. Because I'm like, so you know, now I know how this business works. So he said he'd be good. And it sounds like he's being pretty good about it. I mean, nothing too crazy. I know last weekend... my sister's whole family came down and they went out to lunch and they were careful. They took two cars just in case something happened and he needed to go back home real quick or anything, but sounds like it went good.
Good.
So that is good. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that you never know who's going to be on it, which is weird because we only have two hosts, but
yeah.
Clearly at any second...
anything could happen.
It could change. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 465.
And we have so much to talk about. You don't even know. We have a lot to talk about.
Do we?
Well, yeah, you don't know, but we do.
So
I'm going to do the what this is about.
Yeah, and you don't do it next
I'm not
time.
Doing it next week. So here's how the show works. If you're new to this, in which case that was a heck of an intro. We have parents. They're old. We tell you how they're doing. No, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks, cool people, wonderful people, people who really, we could use their help again. If you take my meaning, please do it.
Take my meaning, please.
Take my meaning, please. That, honey, young man. People, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat magically, all on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's really sort of useless servants draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which really is a lot of the parts.
Yep.
And it has been 2 weeks since we've done this business.
Yeah.
And a lot of things have happened, including a hilarious caucus.
Hilarious? Do you think it's hilarious?
No, I think it's an absolute shit show. But
oh.
In some ways, it's hilarious. I talked to lots of people about how their caucusing went the next day, and wow, was it mixed.
Sure.
From incredibly efficient and successful and straightforward to absolute balls to the wall, insane, didn't make any sense, probably illegal, stupid shit.
Oh, I didn't.
There are places
like that
where they were given incorrect rules. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I knew there was at least one precinct in Marion where they were told if your candidate is not viable in the first round, you cannot attempt to bring people to your candidate. You have to go join a viable candidate. Later that night, they realized that was wrong, but by then a whole bunch of people had gone home already. And yeah, I've heard terrible, terrible things. Trish was out very late, and she only stayed for the first round. And other people I know stayed till the bitter end and were home before she was.
Wow.
Like, it was all over the place. Did you caucus?
I'm not a party member, so I don't caucus for anyone. I just wait to, you know, I let the parties decide, and then I'll decide if I'm going to vote for that person.
I might technically be registered independent. I don't know. I don't caucus regardless, but.
I have a blank in my, you don't. Independent is actually a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You cannot be registered as anything at all, and I'm not. So it sometimes surprises me the way people talk about primaries and caucuses, like they're part of our constitutional electoral system, and they're
not. You bring this up every couple of years.
It's so weird to me.
States have the ability to send whatever delegates they want by whatever method they want, most of the states have just opted for these methods.
Well, and not just that, but if the Democrats said, you know what, we're not going to do primaries, we're just going to pick this person, and you know if you're a Democrat, this is who you're going to vote for. They could do that. That's not disenfranchising anybody. That's not violating their constitution.
Yeah, because the parties aren't technically a part of the government themselves.
No.
A lot of members of the parties are in the government.
Yeah, there's nothing in the Constitution that defines parties or voting rights within parties. A party can do whatever it wants.
I had a horrible realization the other day when somebody was asking me about candidates and stuff, and I said, I really, really don't like Bloomberg. And I suddenly had a realization. I said it out loud, and I said, Bloomberg is Donald Trump if Donald Trump had decided he'd have more success with the Democrats than the Republicans.
I think that's accurate.
I was like, the only thing I like about Bloomberg are the basic Democratic platform things that I agree with, which he only believes in because he wants to be a Democratic nominee.
That seems
And I was
true.
Like, holy shit, he's just Trump, but with a different party.
That seems like the way it is to me.
As far as their personal beliefs, I'm betting they are pretty well aligned.
That's hard to say, but I think you're right in general with it's mostly an opportunistic, you know, that's the party he can run in, basically.
Yeah.
He'd run in something different. Now, I could be wrong about that, but that's your view on it and mine are very similar in that regard.
Well, that was a weird realization.
But the thing about, I was hearing all this stuff about the caucuses on the news, and something that was kind of amazing me about the whole process or all the criticism about it was I couldn't wrap my head around this idea that the Iowa caucuses like owed quick results to anybody, right? I mean, they could be counting votes till whenever the convention is if they want to. They don't. Everyone that was complaining about it was like a news organization or a politician that wanted the results soon because, well, we have this news show and now we don't have anything to talk about. Or I want to have this photo op and I can't. But
because the presidential campaigns have leveraged Iowa to heavy degree since 76. Right,
that's not Iowa's problem.
No. Nope.
I mean, it's Iowa's job.
Except that Iowa insists on being the first in the nation.
For a variety of reasons.
Yes.
But, you know, just about any state that's the first is going to be criticized for something.
Yeah.
And so the purpose of the caucus is for Iowans who are Democrats or Republicans usually. I don't think any other party caucuses.
I didn't even know Republicans caucused in Iowa. I thought they did primary.
No, they caucused.
Okay.
So, in fact, they had a caucus in Iowa and Trump won. But it's for them to figure out who they're going to, what delegates they're going to send. That's the purpose of it. It's not to give you a soundbite or to give you something to talk about in your news show. And so when everybody was talking about Iowa not delivering this and being so mad about it, it's like, who cares what you guys think?
See, I didn't.
I don't know what the
bother with
is.
Any news outlets like that. The only places that I know, which were mostly just people complaining about it, was complaining about the fact that nobody had any idea if it was accurate, and it still looks like it probably wasn't accurate.
And
there's nothing we can do about it.
That is a problem. But a lot of the just about every news outlet I was consuming, including NPR, was talking about it. It's like, why? You know, I realize you guys want results, and that's frustrating. But some of the criticism was like, this is just you whining about not getting something that you wanted for a reason that you wanted it. This isn't really on Iowa or any state that's first. Because I don't care which state's first.
It's interesting that apparently you just got introduced to the 24-hour news cycle.
Well,
is what they do. It just happened to be about Iowa this time.
It was just weird.
But they either are repeating what information they have or are whining that they don't have more information.
Right, but they're not – they're framing it like I – well, for example –
yes, because it's no fun to say, it's sad that we don't have information sooner. It's nobody's fault, but we wish we did. No, you got to blame somebody.
Well,
you always got to blame somebody.
I guess. But like the guy who –
we couldn't find a way to make this Meghan Markle's fault, so Iowa's fault.
The guy who was the head of the Democrats, whoever he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He comes out and he apologizes, and I'm thinking – dude, why are you apologizing?
No, he was apologizing because the app sucked.
Okay.
And that's a little bit on him. I don't know. He resigned, which I'm not saying I wanted him to resign, but I understand. He was the head of the ship, and they fucked it. I'm not talking about time-wise, but they fucked up the caucus.
It didn't seem like he was apologizing to Iowa caucus goers. It seemed like he was apologizing to, like, politicians and the media.
Yeah,
it's
trying to apologize to Democrats.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
But it sounded like he was apologizing to people he didn't know of an apology to. I'm not just talking about Iowa, and I'm not just talking about the Democrats. No state, no party owes politicians or news organizations like immediate results just because they're on some kind of weird timetable.
Okay. So, well, and I'm going to say something I haven't said so far this election cycle, which is interesting. I think you may be feel too strongly about this particular issue.
Well,
I don't disagree with you, but I'm like, who cares?
I just found it annoying.
I don't think anybody actually cares who the news cycle's blaming or who he's apologizing. I mean, like, it was a shit show, and of course people are going to try and point fingers.
Right. But
nobody's going to say, wow, this was a mess. Not that they have any responsibility to do it otherwise.
What I'm expressing, I think, is my frustration with the news.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
which is far broader than this.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated with the news every single day.
The modern news cycle and the modern, like, mainstream news is pretty fucked up.
And this was just one more example of it. It's like, really? You're talking about, why are you talking about this?
Amy Winehouse died and they brought on Val Kilmer to talk about it. Not because he had ever met her, not because he had had any substance abuse history, but because he once played Jim Morrison, who had substance abuse issues and died from it. And that was the only person they could get short notice.
That is so dumb.
Right? That was when I really discovered about the 24-hour news cycle, because I was stuck in an airport and CNN was on the screen up there. And I got to see hours of Amy Winehouse footage of her death, and there was 5 minutes worth of information there that they did over and over and over for hours, and they brought in somebody else who, like, knew somebody who knew Amy Winehouse. Like, again, not anybody who knew her, because they couldn't get anybody like that. It was insane.
Why is the news like this?
Because they got a whole channel to fill.
Yeah, and you know what else? Probably another reason that I'm expressing, you're right, probably an outsized concern about this particular thing, is because there were some news outlets that I respect that jumped on this train. And it disappointed me so much.
Like, I read a lot of news outlets talking up, like mostly making fun of how poorly it went. And they're absolutely right.
Well, some of that
went
stuff,
really poorly.
Some of that stuff was funny. But that's not my issue. It's like
speed and who it's owed to. Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, this one guy who is he's an opinion commentator, and that's fine. But I mean, he went on about the caucus like it was the weirdest thing. I was like, boy, you too, dude. I mean, this is, you usually are criticizing the news for doing things that you're doing right now. It was so disappointing. And but you know, so I don't even know if I'm going to read that guy anymore because you decide not to read this news outlet or this person or that. And it's like, how am I going to get news if every time I go to the news, someone who I thought wasn't like the rest of them in this instance is going to be just like everybody else.
Well, I'm trying to cut down my news, so I don't have a good
every
few months I'm like, I need to cut it down even more.
I keep telling myself I'm going to do that, but I feel like I need to be informed about things. I don't know if I feel like a sense of responsibility, right? Like a civic duty thing or what it is. But recently I was thinking, because the reason we're doing a double is because I'm going to attend something, a political thing, sort of, on Thursday, the local food thing, right?
Okay.
Because that is a really important thing to me politically. And I was actually, while I was thinking about this and how I'm going to attend this, I was tempted I started to think, why don't I just ignore everything else except Johnson County food policy? Because one of the reasons it's so important to me is because I think that food policy is so central to just about everything else in terms of, you know, local movements and community activism and grassroots stuff that's going to help.
Socioeconomic policy, environmentalism, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
So if I get so stressed out by all this other stuff, why don't I just focus on the one thing that I feel like is really important and that sort of leads to all the other stuff eventually anyway? Could I really get myself off the hook and paying attention to national politics and things like that? I mean, I would still, sometimes national politics impacts, you know,
stuff. And that's what I haven't gotten rid of sources lately. I just scroll through and look at headlines and I ask myself, like, what am I possibly going to learn from this?
Yeah.
Is this going to be useful? And I'm not going to lie, my curiosity gets the best of me a lot. And there are a lot of times where Schadenfreude gets the best of me. I read far too many stories about what some stupid politician did where I'm like, I don't need to know that, but the dopamine thing, whatever. But a lot more, I'll read them like, yeah, I don't know that I need to actually read that, and I'll scroll on to the next one.
I'm just wondering if I should prioritize my political thought and activity to something that I feel like I have some control over, for one.
I think so. Really, the national stuff kind of only matters insofar as changes occur that you have to be aware of, like a policy is changing that you'll have to comply with,
right?
Or what you need to know to vote. And beyond that, you as a citizen don't really need to. I've read some people have been talking lately about how, like, politics has become a hobby for people and a source of entertainment for people. And that's not a good way to live. I had some issues this last week with somebody who we had what to her was a very small, very normal and perfectly friendly debate about politics, and what to me was one of the worst and most intense political debates I've had in years. Basically, the biggest one I've had in years, except for a couple of ones you and I have had on here, and made me feel very bad afterwards. And it's just because we think of it differently.
Sure.
And we agree, me and this person agree on almost everything, and she's very serious about it and all that, but it's a very different thing for us. And part of it is she loves arguing with her family, and she does it all the time. They're all Democrats, but they all also have different views within that. And I'm like, oh, that just sounds terrible to me. I would hate to do that.
Yeah, well.
So it's weird. But then none of this is important. What did you do the last 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, the only thing that it would interest our listeners and maybe you is I did see Birds of Prey.
Yes, you did.
Which
also, last night, I saw Birds of Prey.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. I've been waiting all day.
Okay, well.
This is going to be interesting.
Is it?
I don't know. I mean, it is one way or another.
I mean.
One of two things is going to happen, and both of them seem interesting to me.
My summation is.
Lay it on me.
It tried to be a Harley Quinn movie and a backdoor vehicle for a Birds of Prey franchise, and it did a mediocre job of both because it couldn't really do both of those things at the same time.
All right. Interesting.
I right now in Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's 80% critics approve and 80% audiences approve. That seems about right to me. There are problems with it, but not any different than problems you usually get in a superhero movie. I liked elements of it. I liked Huntress. I like Robbie's
portrayal.
Yeah, portrayal of Harley Quinn. I liked Black Canary, but it didn't really come together in a very good cohesive way. You could tell that two directors were involved because the tone was uneven, things like that. Oh, also, I think that. Well, that's not really relevant. So anyway, overall, it was okay. I'm not going to see it again in the theaters. I don't think we'll buy it or anything. But I think it deserves its critic scores. I think the reason its box office is so bad, though, I've heard people theorize, and I think this is probably right, that they tried to make it R-rated.
They did, all right.
And I think that was a mistake. I think it alienated some of the audience that would normally come and go many times, which is younger women.
They've been turning Harley Quinn into a cartoon franchise in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And none of them could go see this.
Right.
The neighbor kid loves Harley Quinn. She can't go see this right. movie.
Well, and not only that, but a lot of people are saying, and this seems pretty right, that mostly all they'd have to take out is some of the F-bombs, and it could be PG-13.
Some of the F-bombs. This movie, I felt like my parents. I was like, they're saying fuck so many times, it's silly. Like, yeah. There were a lot of fucks in this movie.
I agree, but there wasn't very much else that made it R-rated.
They might have to take out a jizz nozzle. She said jizz nozzle once.
Okay, maybe.
And there's a couple of shotguns to the head and stuff, but...
But it would be so easy to make it PG-13, and then...
Oh, yeah, no, I think they very deliberately and intentionally made it R.
I think that more or less single-handedly messed with its box office, because its reviews are good enough, but it... And its word of mouth is probably good. The people who want to go can't go. And it's probably also true that if Harley Quinn in the film had been wearing something closer to what she wore in Suicide Squad, there are a certain... group of people.
There is a demographic that have been complaining that the females in the movie were not dressed sexy enough or skimpy enough.
But I will say this. This is what I was going to say earlier, and I said it wasn't relevant, but maybe it is. I think that it would have helped if there was some point in the film, and I can even name the point in the film where it would have been perfect, if Harley wore some kind of thing while she was doing her thing, some kind of costume.
An iconic something. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not just whatever she was wearing that day. And it didn't have to be trashy or anything. It could have...
Oh, no. There's a very standard, very fairly demure standard Harley Quinn costume that I've seen at many cons.
Sure. I mean, you know, Gal Gadot's costume in Wonder Woman, I've heard a lot of people talk about how that was a costume that women... appreciated for the way it was designed, but also comic book fans appreciated for its comic accuracy. And, you know, men who wanted her to look a certain way also were satisfied with it. So, you know, it seemed to cover a lot of bases. And it might have helped if she, you know, at the point in the film where she was being Harley Quinn, let's put it that way, that she was dressed that way. And also, same with Huntress and everything. These outfits didn't have to be trashy, but they could have been comics accurate. Because here's the thing. Someone said, some critic was talking about how what she liked, because this woman said that she'd been to fashion school or something, and she liked everything that Harley was wearing. But I wonder if she claimed that this was a way that the producers were appealing to female viewers. But that made me wonder if the Venn diagram of women who like to see, I don't know, fashion and hair or something in movies, and the women who want to see comics accurate movies, if there's very much overlap there. Because I know women who want to go to comic book, movies, female-led comic book movies, and they want to see the woman wearing what she has in the comics. Yeah. Tasteful, but that's what they want to see. They don't want to see something that they're going to walk down the runway in. So, I don't know, maybe that would have helped too, but I think mostly it was the R rating and cutting off young girls who would go to this movie and then go to it over and over and over again. But
yeah, this is going to be interesting.
I was okay with it. Mostly. Right. My wife did not like it.
Oh, yeah?
At all.
Oh.
I mean, she had nothing but bad things to say about it. I don't think she's much of a Harley fan anyway. Oh. I'm a lukewarm Harley fan. I when she's done in a particular way, I really like her. But she's not often done that way, yeah. So yeah.
Huh. All right, then. When the credits rolled, I think this is a good summation of a lot of things. When the credits started rolling, my wife and I leaned towards each other, and my wife said,
"I'm surprised you saw it."
Oh, we were kind of excited to see it,
really?
And we heard it was very mediocre, so we tried to keep our expectations low.
Okay.
And Trish says to me, "Well, that was problematic."
Yeah, it was that.
And I say to her, "That movie was bad, bad and gross." I almost walked out twice.
Almost
the only
out.
Reason I didn't walk out is because I was like, she's going to stay, and then I'm just going to have to sit in the lobby being bored for...
I'm really curious to know what...
Oh, it's real easy to say. One was during the public sexual assault scene, of which there was one. There was a scene where someone was publicly being sexually assaulted.
Oh, yeah, and that was so weird. And like,
went on for a long time.
It didn't even make sense.
Yes, and the other one was almost as bad, where a villain captured one of the female heroes by darting her, but instead of making her unconscious, it just paralyzed her, so we really emphasized how creepy it was that she was awake and conscious, but she couldn't move her body, so he could get in real close and do whatever the fuck he wanted with her.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, he didn't do...
Well, I mean, it depends on your definition. He didn't do anything he probably could get arrested for, but he was creepy as fuck
no,
and snuggled
right.
in good.
No, that's right. You're right.
I am sorry I saw this movie. Like, I was never not going to see it, but if I could have found a way to trick myself and not have seen it, I would be happier that way. As Trish said, I am still happy they got our money. Because I still want them making movies like this. But this was a terrible one, in my opinion. And there are two major reasons. There's a lot of small reasons, but most of them are forgivable. There are two major reasons. Only one of them is about gender. The main reason, the one about gender, the big reason, is it was about a bunch of women kicking ass in the last, 10 minutes. And the last 10 minutes of this movie are pretty cool. And pretty funny and pretty awesome. In order to get there, we had to see these women brutalized, violated, and humiliated for the first hour and a half to somehow justify it. And we had to make cartoonishly misogynist villains. Just ridiculous. Like, to the degree that I'm angry at Ewan McGregor because his character was so awful. Like, that I would be mad at him if I met him just for having pretended to be that guy. And really just luxuriated in it as though somehow that's the only way we can justify that you have to fight these guys or something.
Yeah, that was...
It was...
Lots of people have criticized
it. It was just so full of misogynist, horrible shit. And just because at the end we got to kill all of the horrible misogynists doesn't mean it was remotely worth having to sit through all of that gross, just gross stuff. And then the second thing, which is not about gender, and I say this because I have seen this many times before, and in fact it's a common trope, especially in the 90s, and I'm getting sick of it, is... We anti-heroed the shit out of this. Harley Quinn in this movie was an awful, terrible person.
like two times, she proved that there was a line that she would not go as awful a couple of times. But beyond that, she's just a shitty person, and I couldn't root for her because she sucks. Mm-hmm. She's a horrible person. It was that anti-hero bullshit again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, she just sucks. Do I want to see the shit that happened to her happen to her? No. Do I want her to succeed at some of her horrible, selfish, ridiculous, screw over everyone else plans? Also no. Yeah, I really did not like it. And lots of just dumb standard sort of action and superhero movie things. According to this, and I mean, you know, I'm not as versed in the lore, but based on what I saw in this movie, Harley Quinn is absolutely the best close combat fighter in the entire DC universe.
It's getting to be that way.
She, absolutely anybody, she could just, 12 other superheroes, as long as they can't fly or shoot laser beams, she can kill them. It was except for a couple times where it was narratively convenient and suddenly she really sucked at fighting. A couple of times so that guys could get their hands on her and then she could be tied up or held down or whatever. I absolutely agree with you. Mary Elizabeth Winstead as the Huntress was just brilliant. I would watch an entire movie of her.
I would too. I think they should do that.
And the big climactic action sequence and the little aftermath thing was great. Loved that. Last 10, 15 minutes of that movie was a blast. I had a great time with it. It had the best lines. It was wonderful. And I won't say I didn't laugh at many times in the movie. The movie had some good jokes. The movie had some good choreographed action scenes. But it just was so gross. It was so gross and just... And also, it had... what I've heard Suicide Squad had to, it managed to somehow have not enough plot and too much at the same time. Just like so much was going on and so little of it seemed to matter. It was insane for me.
It was tonally uneven. And again, I think because there was more than one director working on it. I mean, but, yeah, it was divided.
And it's weird too, because it was written by a woman and directed by a different woman. And
yes.
Yet I'm
and
still.
Produced by a woman.
Yeah, like. Yeah, by Margot Robbie. Also, and this is not a judgment call, and this is neither here nor there, and I've already established young people won't know what I'm talking about, but Margot Robbie, when she plays Harley Quinn in any capacity, looks, sounds, acts, and just completely reminds me of younger Jamie Presley. Like, freakily so. I keep forgetting she's not Jamie Presley. I don't know. It's just dead on.
Who's that?
I don't know where you'd know her from. She's an actress. She does a lot more television than she does movies, but she does movies too. In My Name is Earl, she's his ex-wife.
I kind of know
she's
that.
She has more of a southern accent normally, but like Margot Robbie reminds me so much of her, and her Harley Quinn persona, the personality reminds me so much of so many parts Jamie Presley is.
She's a good Harley Quinn character-wise.
From an acting and production-wise, this movie was good. I assume Ewan McGregor's villain character was the worst thing ever, but I'm assuming that was writing and directing and not his fault as an actor. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean,
and I don't just mean super gross and comically misogynist. He also made no sense. He wasn't an insane villain and he wasn't an evil villain. He was a petulant villain. Like that was his defining characteristic, was petulance. It was terrible.
I mean,
and his sidekick was. Anytime I think of him, I feel the need to shower. Like
those two characters weren't very similar to the characters in the comic book at all. It wasn't based on the comics.
Yeah, the playing around timeline thing was super ineffective.
Yeah, that didn't really work.
It was just goofy and occasionally confusing. But mostly, yeah, just the two things I said. Like, it was so gross, and Harley Quinn was such a shithead. Like, Harley Quinn is not remotely our protagonist.
I mean, there is a better way to write her. I don't see how she could be portrayed better by the actor. But there are better ways to write her for sure.
We took her out of amoral into heavily immoral. Like,
I don't know why. And you know, like, Montoya's arc, you know, like the other police officer, like, I don't know if there were any other female police officers.
No. And that was part of the thing, is that all the men looked down on her, even though she was really good. Although from what we saw, she's just a drunk, crazy person.
I suppose, but it seemed like...
She accidentally managed to stumble into the right case.
Is this supposed to be set in the 70s or something? I mean,
well, and that was supposed to be a big joke, is that she's obsessed with 80s stuff, but I'm like, no, you just did it weird.
Right, but how could she be the only woman in the whole precinct? Also, all the men be like, like you said, a cartoonish stereotype.
The whole thing was... And she, her character, we got told how cool she was. We never saw she was.
Well, and that happened with a lot of the characters. We were told a lot of things, but not shown.
Black Canary was cool.
Yeah.
Her arc was cliched and dumb.
Which is too bad, because I thought the actor did a good job with the
character. She did a marvelous job. That was bad.
I mean, you're not wrong about any of it.
I was so unhappy.
But I left, you know, I always leave these things thinking, well, I didn't think that was great, but I wouldn't mind seeing this version of Harley Quinn in a better movie, this version of Huntress in a better movie, you know. I kind of leave.
I would watch a Huntress movie all day long.
With that kind of optimism.
But
it still got an 80% Rotten Tomatoes from critics and 80% from
people are saying it's okay.
A B+ cinema score. All the things that all the things that would make you think it would do better at the box office. But I think it's because the target audience is girls that 17 and under, and they just they've locked them out.
No, that was poor design on their part.
Although it might be, given all the stuff you just said, and I think you're right about all those things, it might be a blessing in disguise for society, because probably not good for girls 17 and older to see that
stuff. I'm not happy about it. I will say this. I mean, I guess, spoiler alert, the villain dies at the end. And the way the villain dies, we both laughed.
Really?
I think it was the weird anticlimax, because it was totally how it was at. Like, there was no... Like, it was very sudden and I don't know. We were both just like, that kind of cracked us up out of all the rest of that.
I was probably too busy being disappointed, because this character is not, I mean, this character is some kind of something in the comics. You don't just kill him off.
Yeah.
But I suppose they don't care, so.
Well, and we made him horrible enough. If we didn't kill him off, that wouldn't have been no good.
Well, that's kind of true.
And we did weird.
That's kind of true.
It's supposed to be a sequel to Suicide Squad, but also
not. Yeah, right.
And we did the weird bit where she's like, to be anything like me, you'd have to. And then did her whole backstory there. I was like, why did that happen? Was that just a long joke? Or because we already kind of covered her backstory. What are we doing?
There was a lot of that.
Yeah.
There was the whole egg sandwich thing. There was the whole diamonds are a girl's best friend thing. It's like, none of this fits.
You killed my breakfast was a good line. That is a good line.
But none of it fit into anything. It was
No.
But also, sometimes when things don't fit, it's fun. It's all crazy and wacky. But it didn't seem like that either.
But it definitely seemed like that's what they thought they were doing.
Yeah.
It very much had this vibe of, oh, look, she's like a cartoon character in a regular movie.
Yeah.
Like, no, she's not. She's like a crazy person on the street corner who also kills people for shits and giggles. It's like everybody's cutest serial killer.
Like I said, it tried to be a backdoor pilot for Birds of Prey and a Harley Quinn movie, and it was a mediocre version of both of those things. And maybe not even mediocre to some people you.
I might watch, if it's a Birds of Prey movie with just those other three, I might consider watching that. Mary Elizabeth Winstead was, and she wasn't fucking in the movie hardly till the end, but they put a lot of her in the end, and it was good.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious to me because it was an intensely established and not particularly standard character out of nowhere. So, like, there were scenes with her that I was like, has she been in something? Like, was this character established in a different movie?
Because
it's just really set. Like, she knows who she is.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, like, a stereotype or anything. And
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, I am fascinated by this character, but I feel like the movie thinks I already know her better than this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to, but
yeah.
No, I loved that. Yeah. And Rosie Perez was competent. I mean, whatever. Rosie Perez is a great actor, but she didn't have a lot to work with here. And she spent most of the movie in a t-shirt that said, "I shaved my balls for this." So
yeah, my wife
hated that. I was so wacky and crazy.
My wife hated that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bad enough that they did that joke. But then scene after scene, she was still wearing it. It's like, isn't this joke over?
I was drawing weird parallels for me between this movie and Maleficent. Because, again, it's very metaphorical and it's very, you know, out there. But I feel like this movie was a fairly brutal rape revenge film, but that the people making it didn't realize that's what it was. They thought it was a fun, wacky, empowering film.
I gotcha. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think
you're kind
of
right. Like how Maleficent, they're like, oh, this is a story about, it's a fairy tale. No, it's a rape revenge movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this one, this feels like it too. I'm like, and we spent a lot of time on the rape.
Huh, I didn't really think about it like that.
Disclaimer, there is no actual rape in this movie. There is definitely something that legally qualifies as sexual assault. But there's a lot of women being treated really, really horribly. And men being treated really, really horribly. But
I don't know what's going to happen because the box office is so bad.
It's not so bad. It's not quite what they hoped, but It's making some. And the problem is, I have no idea how much they had to pay those actors. It's a good cast. I don't know what the fuck they must have shelled out for those. Let's talk Dracula.
Dracula?
Have you seen Dracula? On Netflix?
On Netflix?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you see all three?
Yes.
Let's talk about Dracula.
Well, okay then.
How'd you feel about Dracula?
I didn't like it.
At all? Yeah. Here's the thing. Before you say any more, there are in general two camps in terms of their feelings about Dracula. There are people who thought Dracula was pretty good, but then that the ending, the last 10 or 15 minutes, was absolute horseshit. And then there's people who feel that the first two episodes of Dracula were pretty good, and the last entire episode was absolute horseshit. I'm solidly in that second camp, in case you're wondering.
You liked the first two episodes.
I liked the first two episodes quite a bit. I was confused with the first one, because we're doing a lot of this like Merlin the series thing, where we're taking names from the original, but we're just doing other shit with
it. Yeah, right.
And that was, it was hard, because I'm like, I'm trying to get where you're coming from, TV show, and you're changing things up a lot, so I'm getting confused, and I don't like that. But then the second episode I really liked. And then the third episode was absolute horseshit. Well, and here's the thing. It's Gaddis and Moffat, and it's so Gaddis and Moffat. The third episode of Dracula was 100% fourth season Sherlock.
Well, this is what bothered me about it, was it's like, I thought the whole thing was Sherlock. I thought it's like, how can we
Yeah, but Sherlock was good up until a certain point.
Yes, but Sherlock is Sherlock.
Yeah.
Sherlock is not Dracula.
No, but this is how Stephen Moffat's Doctor Who series was also Sherlock. Stephen Moffat has a very distinct style.
But I mean, to the point where one of the episodes is Dracula pretending to be investigating a murder.
Yes.
I mean, come on. That's just way too on the nose.
I will admit, though, I had a lot of fun with that episode. That was a very interesting take on the Demeter.
I liked the woman who was
Dolly Wells. Dolly Wells was amazing.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You remember when I told you recently we saw that movie called Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Yes.
About Lee Israel and all that? In that movie, the main character has an acquaintanceship that turns into kind of a friendship that looks like it might be a love interest, and then it falls apart with a little mousy bookstore girl who did a phenomenal job, Dolly Wells. And it was a completely different part than this. And I was like, I recognize that face. And I looked it up. I'm like, holy shit, is the bookstore chick from Can You Ever Forgive Me? And this was completely different. And it was Marla. The one great thing that's come out of this, I'm going to pay attention to her. I want to see what she does, because she was amazing.
I mean, for portrayals of Van Helsing, this is one of the better ones
you can see.
Anyway.
It was great.
And
cool. She got all the best lines.
And the guy who played Dracula is clearly a fantastic, skilled actor.
He did a marvelous job.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But it's like, why are you just making new Sherlock shows and putting it in a Dracula skin?
Because we think we're really cool when we're Steve Martin. There's a bunch of white guys with a lot of skill who eventually buy into their own hype, and then they start making bullshit. J.M. Straczynski, when he did Babylon 5, by the end of that, he was so convinced of how genius he was, he blew the shit up. Joss Whedon, that's enough right there. I'm just going to say Joss Whedon. J.J. Abrams, everything. Like,
I will say this.
The only reason Lindelof's getting better is because Lost took him down a peg, and he was suddenly like, oh, shit, I have feet of clay. I should be careful.
I will say this. If the third show hadn't
happened?
Yes. If it'd been something else that was consistent with the first two things, and then they had another season, I probably would have watched it.
I think so, too. And we should tell you, for people out there, this is on Netflix. It's called Dracula. There's only three episodes, but it's like miniseries. So they're like 3 hour-and-a-half episodes.
Yeah, right. But it didn't feel like they were going to make any more.
Except it felt like they thought they were going to. Because they didn't. The show ends very definitively
in a
lot of ways. In a terrible way. 100% of people watching Dracula agree that the last, like, 10 minutes of it was terrible. Just on so many levels, many of which I want to say, but they will be they spoil things. But it was a terrible take on things. It was a terrible way that take was handled. It was ridiculous. But also, the entire third episode kept adding new shit in that I'm like, you guys remember this is over in like an hour, right? How are you? And the best example I can get is Mark Gatiss, who helped write and produce this, who's a brilliant guy. He did a bunch with Sherlock, and he played Sherlock's brother in Sherlock. He started life as a very successful comedic actor, but he's gone on to do some amazing shit.
He was in Game of Thrones, I think.
Probably. He's amazing. Played Renfield in this.
Oh, yeah.
He did it really well.
Yeah.
But it was a complete waste of both him and the character of Renfield.
Yep.
It absolutely, they introduced him in one scene that lasted 2 minutes. Later, he was in like two other scenes, both of which lasted like 2 minutes. There was no point whatsoever. We also introduced every other goddamn character that ever existed in Bram Stoker's novel with like 45 minutes left in the series. And we did not introduce them well. Also, the third episode is when we kept switching a lot of our mythology around. Shit that was supposed to work one way didn't work that way, or worked the opposite way. The whole mirrors show me more thing, I'm like, except when they show you way less. Also, several other confusing things about how you claim mirrors work. What? No. Although my biggest issue with suspending disbelief was the idea that they reliably, consistently can get sunlight into that little cage because it's Britain. Like, and I told that to Trish, and she's like, they've waited a month to come in here until the weather forecast was good enough. He was just stuck in there during a month of overcast days. And honestly, there's a character in the third episode called Zoe that I thought was very important, but also very poorly fleshed out. But again, we didn't have time. Like, so much of, well, some of the bad stuff in the third episode was
just
bad.
It didn't seem like they
were so much of the bad stuff was like, this would make sense if you had more episodes.
Well, right.
But you clearly don't.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it seemed like they were rushing to some kind of end.
But they forgot that it was in it. That, like, so much of it was written as though they were continuing it, but they clearly weren't. I mean, it ends. Like, you would have to really stretch to make another season out of this for so many reasons. Like, it was a very definitive end, but it was like they forgot it was ending until just before.
Yeah. That's what it seemed like.
Because they kept adding in new shit.
So
like, why
weird.
Are you doing this? And characters. There are characters that I'm not even sure got names, but they got weird, like, speeches and shit. And clearly we're supposed to be important. And I'm still not sure who they were, because then they were gone after that.
But again,
the one with her finger bitten, I'm like, wow, she's very critical. And wait, what? Where'd she go? Who? What? Who was she again? I don't know. It's too late. It doesn't matter.
All of this is why by the end of it, I was like, yeah, I didn't really like that very much.
A certain character had a certain ailment that could not have been more vague.
But you liked it, though.
I liked the first two episodes.
Oh, okay.
No, I thought the third episode in its entirety was absolute horseshit. I liked the first two episodes. I liked the first episode. I liked a lot the second episode. Even those two, though, I'm like, you don't need to watch it. But it is a fun thing to watch. It's entertaining and amusing. And then you can watch the third one and watch it just turn into a dumpster fire. And here's the thing. People, you can't do just watch the first two episodes and stop. They give you a twist at the end of episode two.
Right.
You're going to watch episode three.
You got to watch the third one.
And you should to see what happens. But what happens? Dumpster fire. And it's hilarious.
Well, I don't know if I thought it was hilarious.
I think it's hilarious now. I could see watching it again now to be like, oh, my God, look at this.
I felt like it wasted a lot of my time.
Weird as fuck. We are trying to do more Sabrina. It is going very slowly because Trish seems to have forgotten what Sabrina is.
A horrible person.
No, Sabrina the show is hot trash.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who could barely make it through until I figured this out. And now I'm like, no, this is hilarious. This is stupid teenagers with universe-altering supernatural powers making terrible decisions and clearly run by a show full of people who have heard of feminism and think they really like it but have never bothered to actually look into what it might be. Like, a woman punching a guy, that's feminism, right? If a woman beats on a guy, that's feminism. That's what that means, right?
I guess.
Women hitting men
is
feminism. The Harley Quinn movie kind of thought that, too. Actually, that was one of the things, and I was talking with somebody earlier. I'm like, Harley Quinn had Chilling Adventures of Sabrina-style feminism in it.
I guess it did. That's a good point. I didn't connect the two.
Men being shitty, and therefore we get to punch them, is their version of feminism.
And then...
It's a variant on girl power that has been in vogue lately and annoys the shit out of me.
Well, the thing
I'm like, women can kick ass and they don't have to be raped first.
The thing that bothers me about Sabrina, and this is all the seasons, not just this one, is the weird opposite day stuff they do with, you know,
that's the best part.
Calling
it's
someone
so
a
ridiculous.
Son of an angel or whatever.
And part three, they are doubling down on that
yes.
shit.
Are you 6 year olds?
We called out heaven as a swear word like 8 times in
yes.
the first episode.
Why?
And one time somebody said, bless it to heaven. No, that's one of my favorite parts because that's the thing. I have to be honest. I'm hate watching it. And it's amazing for that.
But the thing about it is, in the narrative, hell is a bad place.
Yes.
That you don't, nobody wants to go there.
No.
So,
but if you're on that team.
So to say go to hell or what the hell is perfectly appropriate.
No, because it's very nice. Yeah, no. part three, I'm really loving because we're spending a lot of time with the kids having this band. And their band exclusively does covers of songs that I refuse to believe they know.
In this universe or whatever?
They are all songs from before any of these people were alive.
Well, yeah.
But they're also not... Like, I'm like, this is not... This doesn't match your vibe, guys. Like, I'm sensing the 40 or 50-year-old man who chose what songs band was going to do, and I don't believe it.
Now, are you...
It's not even, like, Cherry Bomb, whatever, I'd buy that, but we're not even doing that shit.
This season... The character of Roz, she doesn't wear glasses anymore. She becomes a cheerleader.
Yeah.
I find that kind of insulting.
Oh,
what? Yeah. We can't have nerd black girls? Is that what they're saying?
Well, to be fair, her vision was restored, and it probably wasn't restored to severely nearsighted, because that would be terrible.
Oh, well, I suppose.
But
that's
my in-universe apologist for it. Theo's got a weird vibe going in this, like, when Theo finally embraced his gender identity, also embraced like a weird, like it's very gun happy and shit now, and it's weird. Also, from a show that last season just dropped a Phantom of the Opera song in there with no explanation or context or acknowledgement.
I forgot about that.
They also open up this season with the heaviest handed Wizard of Oz motif I've ever seen, again, without mentioning this. See, and you've got this look on your face like, this is terrible. And I'm like, no, that is what makes this show amazing. This show is is created by a 12-year-old on coke, but with very good actors and very good production values.
But
but it's entirely invented by a 12-year-old on coke.
They're totally Dante-ing up until they get to hell, and then it's the Wizard of Oz.
My God, it's beautiful. I love it. It's so beautiful.
No, it's weird.
We are still sexualizing the shit out of characters that we have established are 16. I do not like that. We keep coming up with excuses to see 16-year-olds in their underwear or getting out of the bath or shit like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This whole Prudence and the cousin thing.
Yeah.
She's, I think, 16.
Oh.
Isn't he like 200 or something?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
That's fucking with me. I'm not liking that.
But none of these, of course, none of these actors are actually 16.
No. And that's the only reason if they weren't, I wouldn't watch it.
But they also don't pass for it.
No. Nobody ever does. Did you ever watch 90210? Holy crap. Those people were in their 30s.
No, I never did. But
no show with teenagers has teenagers. I don't think about it anymore because that's what teenagers look like to me is what I've seen on these TV shows. Because I don't look at teenagers in the real world because teenagers are gross.
Seems like when I watch other things with teenagers and I know they're like 20, they at least still look like teenagers. Maybe because I'm old. But none of these kids look like teenagers. None of them do.
It is such hot trash, and I'm loving, but Trish is not doing well with this.
I don't know why we're still watching it, but
because it's amazing.
But we are watching it. I don't think either of us like it, but I don't think we hate it enough.
See, and Trish used to like it, and I hated it, and now Trish is not happy, but I'm just cracking up. I'm just bouncing and clapping. It's the dumbest shit ever. I'm like, I love this. I love everything about this. It's so dumb. And you clearly put a lot of time and effort into it. And it's cracking me up.
There's a lot of time and effort, for sure.
Because the production values are great. Yeah, the actors are good.
Good.
It is just such an insanely hot mess of a show and a premise.
How did they do that? How did they get such good actors and other people behind the camera obviously doing a good job with scripts that are so terrible?
Off the top of my head, maybe it's a fun show to participate in. Never underestimate the power of a fun thing to do, even if it's not fun to watch. I mean, if that wasn't a thing, Oklahoma would never get made, ever.
There are trade-offs, though, because sometimes, like you said, high production values, that's true, but there are some bits of plot that happen off camera. I mean, a lot of it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the money to do that. Yes. But it's because they spent the money to do this thing over here.
Yeah.
So they're definitely prioritizing which set pieces they're going to do.
It's really impressive. And the thing is, it's also nothing but scenery chewing. So I would love to be an actor on that thing.
Who plays Lilith?
I don't know, but she's the one who played Missy on Doctor Who.
Yeah, and honestly,
Gomez, something Gomez.
Honestly, at this point, we're probably watching mostly for
her.
She's
amazing.
Miranda
Otto's great.
Oh, yeah, right.
Although, make up your mind. Am I going to hate this character or love this character? Because I keep switching.
And Davis? So what? Is that her last name, Davis?
The other aunt?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Lucy Davis?
Yes, I think you might be right. I just always remember she was the original. In the British Office, she was the version of Pam, and that's how I always remember her. And she was Etta Candy.
Etta Candy, that's right.
And I love her, and the two of them play off each other
well. They're really good together.
And Prudence has become a very cool and interesting character, and I've always loved, what's his name, who's like, I'm losing it. I want to say it starts with an A.
Who plays?
The cousin.
Oh, I never remember his name.
No, they got just great. I mean,
how did they do that?
The Fright Club. Fuck you all for that name. I don't tend to like any of them, but it's hilarious to watch their lives suck constantly. and they do. They constantly suck. And they constantly forget about it and get all happy again. And I'm like, you know your lives are going to suck, like, tomorrow. Some family member is going to abuse you or come back from the dead tomorrow. It's always going to happen.
And Sabrina herself is awful.
And makes the worst decisions constantly.
I mean, and not just bad teenage decisions, like, this is going to harm someone and I don't care because it works for me or someone I care about. It's like,
yeah. She doesn't think it through. She's like, oh, wait, that was terrible. I should have realized that. And she always thinks she's got a handle on it, which I'm like, you've never had a handle on anything. At some point, you have to realize you've constantly screwed up every decision you ever made. But it's hilarious. All right, we're way over time, and we didn't do any questions. So we got to record another one. So go away, people. But go watch go watch Dracula because it's funny. And buy a ticket to Birds of Prey, but then don't see it.
What?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.